From the Finley Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company.
It's Henry try. They score! Marchessault from Carlson. Power play goal with a minute to go in the first. And the Knights take a 1-0 lead. Third of the year for Marchessault and the team's first power play goal of the year. What a pass out of the left corner for William Carlson. His fifth assist to lead the team.
Carlson!
That Carlson cut will never get old. And it's not, for those that, you know, are just tuning in, they like hearing the drop, it's not about William Carlson. It's actually about the kicker for the Vikings missing field goals all the time. But it really fits. I love it. One of my favorite things. And Carlson got off the schneid last night. First goal of the season.
You can Everybody, thank me.
Yeah, you got your jersey. Everybody can stop panicking.
Yes.
Power play got off the schneid. They got their first goal of the season after 16 failures. So everything's looking up in Golden Knights world for sure. And when we want to talk hockey, we want to talk to Greg Wyshynski, who joins us right now. How you doing, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm good. And everybody's in a good mood now with the Golden Knights finally playing well. Everybody was panicked, but it's okay. It's okay. These things happen. In hockey, you can't just be great all the time, right?
Well, you could be great at home, yeah. Which I think is one of the reasons why the Knights had sort of struggled a little bit out of the gate. I mean, people forget that one of the reasons why things went so well last season was the confidence and the role they got on with having so many games at home, you know, off the hop. Yeah. So getting back home, getting some home cooking is a good thing for this team. And, you know, last night I thought was kind of the way things have been going. but this time it worked out a little bit better. I mean, the top line obviously hasn't missed a beat with the way that they played this year. And Fleury has proven himself to be, again, a difference maker in goal in the victories that they've had.
Hadn't scored more than two goals in a game. They finally got over that plateau, finally got their first power play goal. Carlson gets his first goal. So all those reasons are reasons people are excited. I threw cold water on everything, though, before you were on with us, because once again, the stupid opening thing came back. And I don't know, you know, how familiar you are with the debate. I know last year everybody loved it in the playoffs. They loved watching all the different things that they did. They had the sword and the stone thing for the regular season last year. Now they've got more of a weird night fight where, like, one of the sides of the ice gets set on fire and then the guy gets thrown in the hole. It's just ridiculous. Is it really entertaining to people?
I kind of remember that from the Cup Final where they you know, pumped the thing up to being now it's like a big fight rather than the sword of the stone thing.
Yeah.
Listen, I can only speak as an outsider that is blessed with frequenting Las Vegas with some regularity now that there's an NHL team there. But I found it to be entertaining. I think it's kitschy fun. I think it's something that is definitely sets Vegas apart from other franchises. And, you know, it's funny. I remember I wrote a story earlier this month about Max Pacioretty and Paul Stastny coming to the team. And Pacioretty said, you know, a lot of guys around the league kind of cast a jealous eye at Vegas and all of the showmanship that goes on there, and, you know, along with the quality of the organization. And Pacioretty was saying that, like, he'd make sure he grabbed his popcorn and hopped on the couch to see what they were going to do with the pregame before some of those playoff games. So it might seem kitschy, it might seem overkill, but to a lot of the folks in the league, it's one of the reasons why Vegas is a desirable location now.
Well, I'll say this. It's my first year on a full-time hockey beat for the newspaper here, and I'm covering the Golden Knights, and I have heard Pacioretty talk about that, and I've heard him say, oh, his kids were very excited when they found out he was coming here because it was the place with the big show. I don't believe it. He's saying it because he's on Vegas now.
I believe it because I heard from other people too. I mean, it's a thing that last year was, you know, it was different, and, you know, not only that, but now, you know, you've got teams around the league that I think took notice of it too. It's going to be really hard to you know, repeat the conditions of having the Golden Knights and having that to be the gimmick. I don't think, like, the San Jose Sharks are going to have a guy dressed up as Left Shark come out and beat up another thing or whatever. But it's definitely something that people outside of Vegas don't mind. But listen, man, if you're there 41 times a year, I'm sure maybe it could lose a little bit of its luster, you know?
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe I'm just there too much. Greg Wyshynski, follow him at Wyshynski, senior NHL writer at ESPN. One of our favorite hockey people for sure. We love to get his take, and we like to talk hardcore hockey. So we'll get into gritty, because I love that thing. He's awesome, right?
Unimpeachably. We did a mascot ranking, the first one that we've done in a post-Gritty world, and he ranked fifth. And rightfully so.
First.
Oh God, yeah.
I mean, he's first.
That's way he's not overranked.
No, he's not first. I mean, there are other, you know, Bailey from the Kings, which I know is, you know, not exactly something you want to say to the arch rivals here, but Bailey from the Kings is my favorite mascot. And not only because he threw a pie in my face once between periods, but because I find him to be wickedly entertaining. The thing with Gritty is we don't know exactly what he's doing in game yet, which is really the test for a mascot. He can pose for photos, he can do some hijinks, but until we see what sort of antics he cooks up, we don't know what he's going to be. And one of them apparently is something ripped off from the LA Kings, where he goes and pours a bunch of popcorn on an opposing fan, which was always Bailey's bit. So,
yeah, I did see that in the playoffs.
So for Gritty, the googly eyes are great. The fact he's basically got on more mainstream American media places than, you know, Connor McDavid has during his career in the span of 2 months. But until I know exactly what to expect from this guy inside the rink during a game, I can't put him number one.
Well, isn't he's new age though? Like, he's all about social media, and I think that's just the new age mascot.
He is, and I keep coming back to the idea that I don't know what it is about this. Maybe it's just the juxtaposition between what we expect from Philadelphia and the goofiness of this mascot. I mean, say what you will about the Philly fanatic, it's a funny looking thing, but it's cruel at the end of the day. And so Gritty is more of a fun loving kind of mascot, which is a weird juxtaposition to the fans in Philadelphia. But whatever it is, man, like, you know, I was watching Good Morning America last week. I remember being in a hotel watching Good Morning America, and it was the day after the Flyers' first home game. And the fifth headline at the start of the show was Gritty grappling down from the top of the arena. And it's just like, you know, if you think about all the things happening in the world, that's headline number five. Something's clicked here that we none of us can really put our finger on.
Well, let's put it this way. We're having this conversation. We just received a tweet from a verified Twitter user named Rochelle Ryan. I don't know if you are familiar with her work. If you are Googling her, make sure you're careful about which computer you do it on. She is awesome, though. We've talked to her before. She's great. And she said, that stupid mascot. She's not happy with our discussion about Gritty, I guess. So
apparently porn stars don't like Gritty.
Apparently
well,
not.
I mean, it really depends on which genre you're talking about. Because I'm sure there are certain, you know, specializations here where a character like Gritty would be more than welcome.
That's wow. Yes, you're going to places that I didn't think we were going to today, but that's good. I appreciate that. No question about the furry community will be maybe pleased with Gritty's work. Okay, real hockey. What is the biggest surprise of this young season to you so far?
Oh, there's a few. You know, I'm looking obviously on the positive side, the fact that the Carolina Hurricanes have been shot out of the gate like a rocket at the beginning of the season is something nobody anticipated, especially because they've been so offensively challenged, and to have, you know, 25 goals already in seven games is really impressive, along with having a novice coach in Rod Brind'Amour. So that's, to me, probably the biggest surprise would be them on the positive side. As far as teams go on the negative side, Florida's really stumbled in their first four games. That's a team that I thought could be in the playoffs for sure. And then you look over in the Western Conference, and it's three teams. Edmonton, where, you know, without Connor McDavid, they probably don't have a victory yet. Arizona doing their usual thing, even though a lot of people picked them to be a big surprise. And the St. Louis Blues, who probably made, outside of, you know, the Leafs getting Tavares and the Sharks getting Carlson, made the biggest noise in the summer with their acquisition. Getting off the hop at 1-2-2 is not something that I think that they expected. Some injuries, as per usual, are factoring into it, but the Blues are definitely a team to watch. I mean, we did our coach's hot seat index this morning on ESPN, and I think Mike Yeo, their coach there, has to be one that you kind of keep your eye on just because the expectations were so high in St. Louis.
I've been pretty surprised by Vancouver. I didn't expect much out of them, and they go on the road and get a couple of impressive wins. I didn't think that was going to happen.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of akin to what we saw last year at Vegas in some ways, where you go into the season as one of only maybe three teams that, or maybe four teams actually, that people kind of expected were going to take a deep dive this year and not compete and try for a high draft pick. And then, you know, when you don't have those expectations placed on there, you can kind of play freely, which is really good for a young team, which is what they have. But, you know, the addition of Elias Pettersson, the kid who was just unfortunately concussed by a Florida Panthers defenseman earlier this week, really kind of invigorated that lineup beyond what's already a pretty good top line with Hobart and Besser. So I agree. I think they're a big surprise. I really like their coach, Travis Green. I think he's one of the better coaches in this league. But at the end of the day, I mean, I just think the lineup is way too thin to compete in what's a meat grinder of a Western Conference.
That's why one of the reasons we love you. You're such a pro. You knew kind of where we were going with that hit, because I've seen it all over your Twitter. Are people, I guess, first of all, walk people through exactly what happened, but are people really arguing that wasn't dirty?
Yeah, they are. Well, you have to see what's happening here. So, like, a lot of people see that hit, and they see it as just a harmless check followed by a guy shoving a dude down. They say, hey, that happens all the time, and hey, you know, are we taking the physicality out of hockey because of this suspension? And it's all nonsense. Look, any play like that where a dude delivers a hit and then shoves a guy down to the ice like he's delivering a rock bottom, and then the guy gets concussed, that's going to be a major penalty. And so, you know, when we look at the Department of Player Safety and supplemental discipline and ask ourselves, what do we really want out of this stuff? Well, what you want is for a team to be punished when their player takes out an opponent. And it would have been a major. He would have been kicked out of the game. There was no penalty. And so the NHL retroactively, you know, gives him a suspension, adds a game to it because of, you know, they have to do that because of concussions now. But the you know, supplemental discipline and apparatus worked here because it was a dirty play.
It was, to me, I mean, it was basically a wrestling move.
Well, and it was the thing about it, too, is that it was petulant, because Pettersson had just sort of deked that dude to the ground, Matheson to the ground, to the ice, with a move in the corner. And then he comes back and kind of tracks him and hits him and then shoves him to the ice because a rookie dared to, you know, put an offensive move on the guy. So there was a certain amount of intent and you know, bitterness there, and I think that's kind of what separated it from a typical play that you might see during the game. But the idea that some, you know, the thing that really pissed me off about this was, like, you know, the idea that oh, the hitting's being taken out of the game. You know, 10 times, if we're talking about the Department of Player Safety, 9 of those times we're talking about hits they didn't go after. You know, a Tom Wilson hit that's borderline, or a Dustin Brown hit that's borderline, that doesn't get a suspension. The one time they actually get it right, well, all of a sudden we're worried about the game becoming real pacifist. And it just seems like a real misguided argument for a hit that clearly was illegal and clearly needed to have a suspension attached to it.
People love Tom Wilson here in Vegas. Don't know if you can sense the sarcasm there. I actually really enjoyed him, covering him last year in the finals. I thought he was a very interesting guy. Where do you stand on, like, is he just dirty, or is he just super athletic and powerful, and, like, it looks worse when he hits guys? Like, what kind of a player is he?
No, I mean, the thing he got rung up for in the preseason, where he's actually meeting, if it didn't happen today, it's happening this week, with Gary Bettman to do the appeal of his suspension, which, you know, after from Bettman, it then goes to a neutral arbitrator who will probably knock it down based on what we've seen. You know, the hit he delivered in the preseason was really dirty. It was one of those blindside hits that had guys ending up on stretchers, you know, of several years ago before they passed Rule 48 about illegal hits to the head. I'm a Tom Wilson fan myself. I think that he adds an element of intimidation to that lineup, and he also, you know, has hung with two of the best offensive players in the world for the last couple of years, and that, I think, is an underrated aspect. It's not simply he's, you know, just some goon that is going around breaking guys' jaws. He's I mean, I hate to make the comparison because you hate to compare anybody to a Hall of Famer, but he's kind of like a modern-day Clark Gillies, you know, out there creating space and taking care of business for Ovechkin and Kuznetsov. So he clearly stepped over the line, and I think he deserves a pretty lengthy suspension. I'm not quite sure if the number that the NHL arrived at is going to hold up to scrutiny, though, because there's no real precedent for it.
Greg Wyshynski, NHL writer at ESPN. Always good to hear from him. Last couple of things for you. Chicago, are they going to bounce back? Are they for real?
No, but okay. It's been fun to see this little resurgence. I mean, Taves is playing out of his mind right now, a guy who's really on a mission, a guy who obviously took it personally when people said that the dynasty was over and they were going to be, you know, a last-place team. The only thing that gives me pause about whether or not they could be a contender is that Corey Crawford, their goaltender, is supposed to come back this week. When he's healthy, I think that guy is an upper-echelon goalie in the league and could sustain this maybe a little bit longer. But ultimately, I just think that lineup's too thin to compete in the West.
And I saw somebody ask you, did somebody ask if the Seattle team was going to be the Sonics?
Yeah, it's funny. If they're going to be the Sonics, if they might wear the green and yellow, they're not going to be the Sonics.
Okay.
That name is being reserved for when the NBA comes back, which could be, you know, if it's expansion, maybe 2025, but if it's relocation, maybe sooner. And then the colors, I was told, explicitly won't be the yellow and green. That's sort of blasphemous in the eyes of people in Seattle because those are going to be reserved for the Sonics as well.
Yeah. I would like to see that skyline, like, logo with, like, the tower on and everything.
That'd be really cool. Yeah. I'm genuinely intrigued to see what the name ends up being. Another thing I heard in the last couple of weeks is that Totems, which was the name of an older team in Seattle's hockey history, might be kind of looked down upon because of all the Native American stuff that's going on in sports as far as using that iconography. I want it to be the Sasquatch. That's been my cause for several years. An amazing name. But I think at the end of the day, they're probably going to name him after a fish.
A fish? By the way, how dumb am I? I said I was like the tower because I couldn't think of Space Needle. I'm an idiot. But I did come up with it eventually after a few seconds. The last thing on them, and we'll let you get out of here, is the expansion rules. Like we know we've talked so much about it with Vegas and everything that happened here. Vegas won't have to give up a player. But do you think teams learned a lot from how they dealt with Vegas and will apply that to how they deal with Seattle?
Oh, God, yeah, without question. I mean, Seattle, like you said, they're going to get the same expansion rules, so they'll get a pretty good collection of players straight away. But what you're not going to see are the moves that benefited Vegas so greatly. You know, the trade with Florida to get Marchessault and Riley and a couple of the other moves that came down from teams that were panicking about how to handle the expansion draft. I don't think you're going to see that level of panic anymore and overcompensation to try to protect guys. I think that was probably the biggest lesson to be learned. But, you know, credit to George McPhee, man. Like, not only did the expansion draft itself yield a pretty impressive team, the moves he was able to make using it as influence produced a Western Conference champion last year.
There you go. Always a pleasure to talk hockey with you, man. We really appreciate it. And I you seem to be as much of an NBA Jam fan as I am, so I like that, too.
Dude, I was all about those shirts today because, you know, when I was a kid, Seattle with Shrimp and then Indiana with Reggie Miller were my team.
Oh, they're great. By the way, I have the four-player stand-up arcade game at my house.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to carve out some time next time I'm down.
There you go. Thanks so much, man. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
Greg Wyshynski. Follow at Wyshynski, the former Puck Daddy blogger up on the internet. Really one of the absolute best in the business. We appreciate a few minutes from him.